Katie Gentile, welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Jan. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, you've taken on a number of issues as a feminist scholar, including reproductive rights and the problem of sexual assault on college campuses. And in the midst of right-wing assaults on pretty much everything associated with progress these days, the recent feminist campaign against sexual harassment seems, for many of us, a kind of singular beacon of light in an otherwise dark night of politics. So let's start by talking about the Senate victory last week of Doug Jones in Alabama and the role of sexual politics in that case. The victory by Democrat Jones against Republican, not reproductive rights, Roy Moore, was fueled by the series of stories and allegations against Moore for sexual abuse of teenagers. Let's start with that dramatic victory and what many recognize as the vital role of African-American voters in Alabama in defeating Moore. What do you think were some of the critical political dynamics here? And then perhaps we can move to talking about the role of Black feminist thought in working through not only allegations against men accused of sexual assault or sexual misconduct, but also how to think about feminist ways of addressing the problem. So let's start with that that Senate victory last week. What's your take on it?
Well, I think you introduced it really well, because there's so many issues in that. But I think what I was struck by, and I'm sure you were as well, is just the ways in which the moral panic around his behavior with teenage girls, white teenage girls in particular, and which was, you know, obviously not okay, horrible, but this. The press really, when they did discuss it, they discussed that. And what seemed to get ignored was the fact that this was also a candidate who believed in criminalizing homosexuality, which is very different than saying I'm not pro-gay marriage. I mean, criminalizing homosexuality is going back, you know, decades in our law books. So that was one thing that he believed in. And then the other thing was his comments about how families were so much more coherent and supportive of each other during slavery. So you've got this candidate who in that sense is really, it cries out for an intersectional analysis and solidarity across not just white women, but all women, across issues of sexuality, race, class, and it seemed like when you looked at the voting polls, in fact, that just didn't happen. And white women were more apt to vote for Roy Moore, and it was the Black women who were able to see more intersectionally about the issues.
And Doug Jones had kind of made his name as a U.S. attorney over a decade ago when he successfully prosecuted members of the Ku Klux Klan for the 1963 yeah. bombing of a Birmingham church in Alabama that killed four Black girls. And that didn't get, I mean, that was part of his campaign, but was not so much at the center of the larger national campaign around the urgency of this Senate victory for Jones.
No, I mean, you know, the thing, while on one hand I'm, you know, like you said, there's a certain really curious, interesting reckoning that might be happening, but the reckoning seems to be ignoring issues of race. Just like the press ignored, you know, his very significant history in the role of civil rights. It's kind of insane that the press wasn't talking about that.
Yeah, and I think also the issues around power in the workplace that have been so important in thinking about in the history of legislation on sexual harassment, that it extends to the workplace, and issues of power and economic control men have over women in the workplace, that Black feminists have contributed an important insights in extending the workplace to the home, which also is part of the sexual domestic violence campaigns, was thinking about the home as a workplace, but also that Black women have a history of household work now in the service industry that is subject to also not only the harassment and sexual exploitation by white men, but also of white women in the workplace. How do you draw on some of these insights in thinking in more complex ways about sexual harassment in the workplace and what we can learn from this current period beyond the collective state of outrage and calling to bring down or sack these men, have them fired from their jobs?
Well, I think it's whether or not they deserve to be fired, there's really, you know, it can't be a bad apple scenario where all the badness and all the problems are located in that one body. I mean, we have such a neoliberal response to these things. And
you mean in terms of thinking about very individualist solutions,
yeah,
where the denouement is a kind of collective catharsis? Well, we brought down a mighty man and expelled him from our midst, and therefore we can all feel a virtuous sense of relief.
Right. Yes, a very virtuous sense of relief. Yeah, and that's super dangerous because it obviously isn't going to change the dynamics of power and control that support this kind of behavior and other forms of bullying, as you said, around race, class, sexual orientation, and gender conformity. So, I mean, I think that part of the problem, you know, looking at actually going back to Fanon's idea that the colonized carry the shameful affects of the colonizer, and if we look at the way power is used oftentimes to shame the powerless, then we can take it out of the realm. We can see it more as an operation of power to dehumanize the other, whether it's a white woman being dehumanized by a white man, or white women dehumanizing women of color in different workplace scenarios or other forms of scenarios. So I think that seeing this as a power structure problem and not as an individual problem is key. And Black feminist thought is much has done a better job in a lot of ways undermining or kind of deconstructing the ways in which white women in particular are still often motivated to protect the, to hold the shame for white men, and to also seek men's approval before their own solidarity or collective action. And that is always going to stop us from making strides towards a more equal workplace.
And that has concerned me some with daily reports and outrageous stories of Trump and his and the other guys like him, you know, who are fascinating in their outrageous disregard of kind of the most basic aspects of what we've thought of as civility and the ways in which old forms of patriarchy had a kind of chivalry attached to them, and no more of that is on display.
Yeah.
But there can be a fascination with these powerful men and seeking recognition from them, and then cast to the shadows are all the ways in which we as women are sometimes implicated in those, and propping up power in, and sometimes with very few degrees of freedom and choice, which of course is always a point made. But to me, coming into feminism in the 70s, I was very aware of it, that it required something of us as women, as cis women, as well as of men, in thinking about turning to men for recognition and where we turned and how to work through all of the painful differences we bring to feminism through our various histories.
Yeah. I mean, I think you know, having been influenced by 70s feminism and feminist thought, I mean, there is more, not, I won't say more, but the focus on the community and finding spaces of self-worth that might contradict the dominant culture seems to be very, very radical and hard to do, hard to come by in a culture of just, you know, increasing commodification of and objectification of the female body, and linking commodification and objectification to some form of power, even though it's a spurious form of power or an incomplete form of power, because it doesn't change the system. And that's part of the problem. I mean, you see some of these men who've been toppled, let's say, and there's no way there wasn't a team behind them maintaining the collusion. And that included women and men who were oftentimes most likely in kind of no-win situations in terms of losing their job if they opened their mouths. I mean, there was a quote from somebody who worked at one of the radio stations that was implicated that said, "We all knew if you open your mouth, you will disappear." And that's really terrifying.
And that points, I think, to workplace forms of organizing, how to think about the role of unions, which are now involved in some of the issues around hotel workers, organizing around sexual assault of hotel workers, and thinking about enlisting men as comrades around workplace grievances that have been more difficult too with the decline of unions and other workplace sites of self-organization. And so as more people are isolated, including women, and the prospects of employment seem so fragile, I think that also is perhaps part of what we need to address as feminists.
Yeah, and even the shift from unions talk about members and workers, and, you know, the tax bill talks about creating jobs. Well, creating jobs is not the same as creating workers. These are very different things. So we live in a culture that creates jobs, and these jobs are based on really no rights for the worker. And then you've got, in the case of sexual harassment on the job, you've got a massive form of institutional betrayal, no job security, and maybe HR, if you're in an organization that has a human resource department that is even local. I mean, many corporations are so large now that human resources might be in a different state. You don't know. And then human resources is the instrument of the institution. I mean, no matter how good that human resources person might be who's supposedly handling these forms of sexual misconduct, whatever you want to call it, they're still being paid by the corporation.
So let's continue this conversation about sexual harassment as a symptom of deeper problems of gender, race, and hierarchy in workplaces, and how to organize beyond kind of the collective outrage that is always part of a social movement, but not enough. Thank you so much, Katie Gentile, for being with us today on the Olmel Variety Hour.
Thank you, and thank you for all your work.
You too.
Okay.
Carry it on.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.